806 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. And reminder, too, talked about it yesterday, been talking about some this morning. There's still a need, although y'all stepped up. I mean, y'all were awesome yesterday, sending in pictures of your N95 mask before you took those donations to USA Children's and Women's Hospital. Need I say more about how great the folks are there and the work they do? There's still a need of those N, as in Nancy, 95 or higher masks. Because somebody said, well, what about N99? I think those are fine, too. USA Children's and Women's Hospital in need of those. We have the contact info here for you. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you just Google.
Yeah, if you go online, specifically USAHealthSystems.com/contact, and that'll give you the numbers for USA Women's and Children's and all their other contact numbers there. So if you've got those masks that you want to donate or other PPE, just give them a call and they'll tell you what to do.
You're so hip. You've already gone with the PPE.
I know, and I didn't even know what it stood for 3 days ago.
But now you're a master of it. Also, Jason had said something yesterday to us about this, that the folks out at Providence Hospital in need of hand sanitizer, so same deal there. If you have some, and they're talking about more in a bulk, you know, and somebody said, well, who has that doesn't know they have it? The story this morning, they found, I don't know how many it was. It was... they were in the crypt of the Washington...
500, right?
I think it was more than that. In the Washington National Cathedral, 5,000 respirator masks they found yesterday.
Wow.
And they're donating those to Washington, D.C. area hospitals. So, listen, keep searching for those N95 masks, sanitizer, all those things. Donate to those folks on the front line, real heroes in this fight against coronavirus. And that is physicians, nurses, people that clean at the hospital, everybody working at healthcare facilities. They are on the front line, and let's do our part to back them up. All right, let's check in with our buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. and a lot to talk about this morning. Hey, Robert.
Good morning, Sean. Good morning, Dalton. How you guys doing?
We're good. And we're, by the way, let's point out, Dalton and I stay over 6 feet apart here in the studio. Yes. We have our social distancing, yes. And you are even more than 6 feet away from us as you're
I am more than 6 feet apart because I would like to stay married. And my wife told me that I wasn't allowed to go. So, yeah. Hey, Aquaman, love you. I'm waving at her at the other end of the house right now.
Hey, Aquaman. A lot to talk about this morning. Let's talk about the big story with the Senate last night, doing their part to pass this coronavirus relief bill or the stimulus bill. $2 trillion here. This is big time.
Yeah, I know we're going to unpeel the onion on this. So let's start off first by giving credit where credit is due. 96-0.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the fact that the Senate was able to come together and pass something unanimously during this time of community need is definitely a good thing. So big thumbs up for the fact they got it through and got it passed. There are some concerns though. $2 trillion is a big number, and we still don't know everything that's in the bill yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you said 800 or 900 pages. I saw something the other day that was 1,300. I don't know where the final edit went, but. It's voluminous.
Yeah, let's just say something close to 1,000 pages, okay, that I believe people started seeing the text of probably within, you know, an hour or two of them actually doing the vote. So, you know, no one actually read it from cover to cover.
There's no way to do that. And of course, this is a crucial time, y'all, but this is what we've talked about in the past. We get this situation. There's just no human way. So people are voting on it. This is nonpartisan. Everybody up there is voting on it without reading the entire thing.
Exactly. But we can, at least as of the conversation this morning, we can talk about some good things that were actually in the bill. And I think you guys touched on it in the earlier segment. The thing that I thought was the most positive was the fact that it was going to allow for small business loans,
yep,
for those companies that have less than 500 employees, and that was going to allow them to fund wages, salaries, operating costs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that is definitely a...
Yeah, and what we're talking about, if you didn't hear us talk about earlier, what Robert's mentioning is, so the portion of this for small business, it is a small business loan. I think the loan is at 4% and it's for long term, but within that, the amount of money you spend on wages and salary and also health insurance premiums, other operating costs, I think it's utilities and rent as well, will be 100% forgiven, which to me, looking at this very big unemployment number that came out this morning, that should start to stem that or turn that around. I would think that most companies that were doing just fine before this virus hit and were working want to retain their people, want to take care of those people, make sure they can pay their rent, make sure they can pay their mortgage, take care of their kids, and keep them close as part of the company. So when things get better, you go right back to work.
And there are some qualifiers on that, which, you know, kind of prevent those employees from losing their job within a certain time frame. You're not allowed to, you know, offshore some of those businesses, et cetera, et cetera. So as long as those controls are in place so that the actual goal, if you will, is met, I think that part of the bill is definitely
Yeah, and it's a way, and we'll see if you agree. I looked at it and I said, this may be a more efficient way. If we know that we've already seen the first batch of unemployment numbers, that there's going to be massive unemployment. You're looking at that from a federal level. Okay. And we're going to have to deal with this with unemployment benefits that won't be, obviously, the full wages or salaries of folks. But we're trying to, what they're doing here is giving an enhanced unemployment benefit in a way, but letting the private businesses do the work of the government, right? I mean, they keep people on, keeps them off the rolls.
Almost. So I do consulting work. I have a portfolio of clients here locally. I've got to give a shout out to one of my clients who made the decision to keep people on payroll for X number of weeks, independent of what the government was doing.
Yeah, right? that's a good thing.
Yeah, independent, and it's costing them millions. So shout out. I know they listen on Thursday morning, so they know who they are. So I'm definitely giving them a shout out for taking that action. Having said that, those employees for this particular client are still in place.
Mm-hmm.
So your jobless numbers that you referred to earlier, what was that, 3.3 million jobless claims?
Yeah.
Those folks aren't working right now.
Right.
That's
right?
So that part that we were giving the positive on the bill going through isn't helping them. Now you're into the combination of the $1,200 one-time check plus the enhanced unemployment benefit up to, I think, $600 a week or something like that. That needs to go through fast. Those are the individuals who are hurting today because they already lost their job.
And with those individual checks, Robert, that we were talking about, and they're basing it off the 2019 tax returns or 2018 if you hadn't filed for that year, we've been talking about whether that is the best way to divvy up the money, because a lot of those people, you know, haven't lost hours, or and then a lot of those people have been completely furloughed almost. So where does the divide or where does the attention go from needing to be fast or needing to get this done the best way?
You know, I personally am not enthusiastic about those establishment criteria, particularly when they're that far in arrears. And I'll give you a for example that your listening audience may not be aware of. So when I ran for United States Congress in the 2018 cycle, Aquilin and I did not work. So we actually came out of the workforce. So I go over to the VA in order to attempt to activate my VA benefit from medical. I discovered at the time that I was not eligible because the last year that I had worked, I had made too much money. And so just so you guys understand what too much money is, that is if you make more than $39,000 a year, you're not eligible to start a VA benefit. Now, mind you, no one told me this in 1988 when I first signed up for the military, but be that as it may, $39,000 a year is the financial threshold to start it. So I say that to say, if you're looking at somebody's tax return in 2018, for example, and they were making, you know, what, call it more than $75,000, well, here we are in 2020. They may not have worked in 2019. They may not have anything now. And to use that eligibility requirement when they're just trying to figure out how to feed their families may not necessarily be the best thing.
Yeah. There's going to be problems with this. And, you know, it was even, I think, the initial here, the discussion of the one-time payments to Americans. I know I have one of my many unpopular opinions. I think the government's just trying to figure out something to do. I know I took my arrows yesterday on it, but I don't believe, maybe people have specific cases, but I don't believe people that didn't lose their jobs need to get the check. I would like to see the money go to the people like you described. They're out of work. They're part of this 3.2 million. They're out of work to get them through. Don't just give it everybody a check. Let's focus it on the people that need it. You know, we'd all love to have extra money in the budget, but this is all deficit spending going forward.
let me explain to you, because there's a distinction here, and we were actually having some interesting conversations about this internally. So it's like, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? So if the problem that you're trying to solve is you have a person who's in their house and they don't have any income coming in, you want to figure out how to get them enough money to basically keep them a little bit less than ideal.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The government's never going to be able to make them whole, but you don't want them to get kicked out of their house.
Correct.
During this time of emergency. That's one problem. And getting money to them, whether it's through this bill with the wages and salaries and operating costs for people who are currently working, or whether it's through some sort of unemployment process, enhanced unemployment, you're accomplishing that goal. So put that to the left. When you talk about putting money in every single American's hands, that's closer to what was happening after the financial crisis.
That was 08.
Just trying to get money circulating through the system.
Right, but what happened in 08? What happened that people didn't...
It was financial.
Yes, but financial. When you give that money to folks, I think there's a little part of this that goes from economics to the humanities here, and I think a lot of folks, when they get that check, if the situation's bad enough, they say, you know, hey, honey, if we're getting a check from the government because things are so bad, we probably don't need to, we only need to spend as much of this as we have to. Let's hold on to the rest.
Oh, I agree with you philosophically, right? The only situation where I saw that that was not the case was after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita, right? And that's something that we experienced where folks just literally couldn't access money because there was no infrastructure allowed to do it. And by putting money directly into their hands, theoretically, you can use that money to buy your necessities. Now, of course, there was some abuse to the system, as we all remember seeing some of those images.
Oh, yeah.
But that, the point that I'm trying to make is the situation is different. So the check in every American's hand is because theoretically you want money flowing through the system, and it doesn't matter your eligibility. There's a chance that if you give people money, some people are going to spend that.
And I get
very
that,
different than just keeping a person in their house, maintaining their household.
All right, hold on to that. We're coming right back. More with Robert Kennedy Jr. right here on Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Have you noticed, if you want to know if people are quarantining, which, by the way, I got to just say it really quickly. I know I want to get back to our conversation with Robert, but some of those things where Google talks about how people spell things in their searches, other than some variant of quarantine properly, you know, the next, the next most type term for quarantine?
What's that?
C-O-R-N. One word. Next word, teen.
I saw that. There was a viral.
Quarantine.
There was a meme. I need to stop using the word viral when talking about anything other than COVID-19. But there was a meme that went around.
Quarantine.
And I believe it was a restaurant in Greenville, Alabama, that said they were laying out the rules before you walk in. It was on the door, and it said, you know, stay 6 feet away from each other in here. And also, if you are feeling sick, make sure you quarantine. Quarantine, just like you were talking about.
It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. But no, you notice the, because of people quarantining out there, it's a silver lining to a very gray cloud. Traffic has not been bad.
I have noticed that.
Traffic is not. Robert, have you noticed that? Have you gone outside to see the traffic is much reduced?
We've only been out a couple of times, and it literally looks like those car commercials where you're just driving by yourself on the road.
Yeah, yes.
You could take the curves at a nice rate of speed. One positive in an otherwise negative world. Right?
You point out a truism. Y'all think about all the car commercials. You're like, yeah, you don't ever get to drive like that. You're stuck behind somebody. All right. So we're talking about what the Senate has passed, and now the House is going to have to come in to vote, and literally come in to Washington to vote. Those are the rules, unless they get a unanimous consent, which doesn't look like they're going to get a UC here. They're going to go in to vote. Brings up this question. This is kind of nerdy political stuff, but you're the man to talk to about that. What about remote voting? Somebody, is it time to have some kind of exception in times of whatever, pandemic, or that they could remotely vote in the Senate and the House?
Yeah, this is actually really interesting, because it goes to, once again, about what's the goal. So if it's, you know, 1787 before they signed off on the Constitution, and you're having to get together by horse and buggy because you don't have any other means of transportation, it probably makes sense to require everybody to be there, right? But where we are right now, with remote technology, which you and I are using right now in order to do this segment on the show, coupled with the ability to verify, right? Because you want to make sure someone's not hacking in and trying to communicate somebody else's vote if that's not their intention.
Right.
We know the objective can be accomplished. And truth be told, I think there's probably some benefit to having folks remain in their districts and cast votes remotely in this situation as opposed to having them flying back and forth and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, I would say that I want it for an exception, right? Not the rule, because I think the sausage making is probably done best face to face, and we don't want to have the House and Senate be there just for show. The people there.
You really think they're making the sausage face to face?
No, they make it. You see them make some of that sausage face to face, not usually on the floor of the House or Senate, but they do that in the buildings, the connecting hallways. They do. But so I like the idea of them being there. I don't want to make those structures obsolete. But yeah, in situations like this, could we use technology for that? I think it's a worthwhile discussion. Also, let's talk about with this tough economic news here, with the 3.2 million unemployed and some of the benefits handed out here that could help folks. Your prediction now, we've got the scientists and medical officials predicting the turnaround here, or the peak, and then the downward trend on coronavirus cases. What about the economy? Right. What's your feeling? I mean, do you have a sense of when you think we turn this around?
I think it's going to be a minute. I think if you look at the volatility that we've seen in the stock market, I think we're going to have to be on the other end of this. And I don't consider myself to be pessimistic. I consider myself to be realistic. I think you're looking at probably 12 weeks before we're able to get a real good sense of what we're dealing with. That doesn't mean that it's going to be over, but I think we'll have enough data at that point, and we'll be able to see kind of the rate of spread across the country. And then I think we'll have enough data to be able to really predict when we're going to come out of it. But I think it's going to be probably closer to 12 weeks than it is to 8 weeks.
There we go. As always, man, I appreciate our time together. We'll talk again next week. Y'all stay safe. But you get out. Don't be like, you and I are close to the same age. Don't be old guy looking out through the windows. Go out in your yard. Get out.
No. The one thing about my street is there isn't much traffic on it. So I get out there and I walk my laps in front of the house. So I do get out and get my vitamins.
There you go.
You guys be good. Be safe.
Will do. As always, a pleasure. Robert Kennedy Jr. joining us here on Mobile Mornings. A heads up, too, if you've spent a little extra time around the house, a lot of extra time around the house, maybe it's given you a good chance to identify the junk in the house, outside the house. And we're talking about small businesses locally. It's my buddy Trey and his crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. 11 years in the business getting rid of junk. That's like the big way to say what they do. But they do all kind of junk. I mean, it could be, you get him. He had a story for me one time. He said, we went out to clean out a storage shed in the backyard. And so we're clearing all the stuff out of this guy's storage shed. And he says, well, I really don't want the shed either. They can do that too. They took down the shed and took it with them. So it can be big stuff like that. It could be boxes of stuff from inside. It could be a storage unit you've been paying on for years. You don't need that stuff. Let 1-800-GOT-JUNK get rid of the junk. And here's how you do it. You go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll make an appointment time on a specific day. You'll all agree on it. They'll show up. They'll quote you a price on the job, and they'll get to work. And if you like that, and you get to work and you just kind of walk around and say that, and that thing over there, get that too. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, Rob Holbert from Landyap joins us in just a little bit. We'll talk about some of these national issues mixed in with the city of Mobile, Baldwin County, Mobile County, how it applies down here. Also, take your text at 343-0106. And by the way, y'all are doing, I knew y'all were doing good work, getting word back from the folks at USA Children's and Women's Hospital of those donations of the N95 mask. Y'all keep them up. Keep it up. Go look out in the shop. Probably got some in a blister pack out there. Listen, you save yourself the danger of opening a blister pack and cutting yourself.
Yeah.
Just donate that to the folks helping out the kids at USA Children's and Women's Hospital. We'll be right back.
On FM Talk 106.5, this is Mobile Mornings. Let's talk with Louie Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louie.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Let me tell you what I'm doing right now. I'm at McConnellAutomotive.com. very top of the page, you have those great GMC deals that are currently ongoing, but the entire inventory right there on the website. Tell us about it.
The entire inventory is right there on the website. You know, we got shop, click, and drive. We got, I mean, y'all can shop from home. Give us a buzz. We'll come pick up your car if you need service. We've got a drop-off area. You can drop your car off if you want to drop it off. But like I said, we'll come pick it up for service. We got Orlando walking around with a spray bottle. We're cleaning everything. We're cleaning cars. We're trying to keep everything clean. But like I said, if you feel uncomfortable, just check us out online at McConnellAutomotive.com and give us a call at 251-476-4141. Don't forget, we'll buy your car too. Just call Gene or I. Give us a van, and we'll give you a price on it right off the telephone.
And we got some time here, too. Tell people about that awesome deal passed down from GMC.
Yeah. I mean, you got to admit, 0% for 84 months.
Wow.
That's just awesome. That's never happened before. And then they knock your first three payments, four payments, actually. You know, they defer them. So it's a great deal. And, you know, want to say, too, we got some traded in, I'll just tell you this, a 2020 three-quarter ton work truck yesterday. A company bought it and it couldn't use it. Got 100 miles on it. 100
wow.
miles. We certified it, which gives them an extra year on the warranty and the powertrain warranty up to 100,000 miles. So, I mean, you know, that's a heck of a deal for anybody, any work, you know, construction company, something like that. It's a three-quarter ton. Anybody wants to get a good deal on it, just give us a call.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right. Speaking of online, the Nappy nomination is online right now. Over what is the address on the web there, Rob?
It is votenappies.com.
All right, and that is going on.
We're still doing this.
That's what I was going to ask.
We're still doing it.
There's been no quarantining of the.
We have not quarantined the nappies. You know, it's a good thing. It's a good time to support people. You know, it's a good time to get out and tell people you love them. And you know, and
in a virtual way,
nominate the people that you nominate the folks you like. I mean, we're going to get out of this one of these days, hopefully soon, and you know, we'll have to resume life. And yes, we're trying to move forward and keep that thing rolling.
And Rob, I mean, you always get millions of votes. Obviously, we don't want everyone stuck at home, but we've got to be looking at an unprecedented number of online votes this year.
You know, probably so, Dalton. Honestly, we've been so busy writing about all this stuff and doing stuff, I haven't even looked at it in days, and I don't think Ashley has either. We've just been going. It's, you know, it's automated there. People can file it in. I'm sure there will be a big number at the end of it.
I want to talk about in the national story here, of course, of coronavirus, but let's bring it back locally as well. You had a press conference yesterday with Mayor Stimson and Dr. Eichold with the Mobile County Health Department together. I guess a show of solidarity?
Yeah, there was. Finally, I think there's been some, you know, I think they've had some issues between them, and, you know, I'm glad to see them working together. I'm hopeful that we're going to see, you know, I personally have been saying, I said in my column, I think we as the public ought to be able to see how many hospital beds, how many respirators we have available on a daily basis so that we can see what's going on and we can see if our supply is dwindling, et cetera, just so that we have some concept because, you know, we're being asked to make extraordinary moves and to do extraordinary things. And that has been something that, you know, we've not been able to get. The health department won't give it to us. The city hasn't been able to give it to us. And I personally think, you know, that's public information at this point. We ought to know those things because that's what we're aiming to stop from happening is an overrun of those facilities and those resources. So it would be nice for us to have a concept of what we're dealing with before we start talking about something like locking the city down.
Okay, and I want to get around to that, but for a second here, I do agree with you, actually, but for the sake of sparring here, right? Let's run through this. So if you put that information out, okay, if that information all comes out, and I'm going to say me, I'm not going to speak for other people, I'm uneducated in, you know, what it means for, you know, who needs a respirator, who doesn't, all these stats. Maybe there's, and I see it, and it causes some kind of increased panic or makes me head to the hospital to try to get in that last bed when I really don't have the, you know, have the conditions that warrant it. Could that information be better, you know, in this case, to kind of protect everybody from ourselves, or at least me?
I guess if you believe that that's the way things ought to be done, then you probably shouldn't be told about taxes. You probably shouldn't be told about crime. You probably shouldn't be told about a lot of things if you can't handle knowing things. I mean, saying ignorance is bliss, I guess. You know, we're being asked to do things that are very difficult and require a lot of intellect to do, such as, you know, balance our budgets, figure out how to make ends meet, to, you know, do all these things, to not, you know, to socially distance and get things done that we have to do. Those all require thought processes that we're expected to have, but we can't understand whether we have, you know, just knowing the number of beds and whatever should be a secret because it makes cause a panic. I think that's really over the top.
But I know that we've seen cases of, you know, people going when they opened up testing facilities. I think a stat that Congressman Burns said the other day, that 90% of the people that got a test, and I forget where it was, Dalton, but 90% of, maybe it was in New York or somewhere, but 90% of the people, maybe nationally, were testing negative for coronavirus. But there's a whole bunch of people going to get that test for peace of mind, which then, you know, in a scarcity situation, keeps other people who might need it from getting one.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know, look, we've talked to medical professionals who are going to the hospitals every day, and they're telling us that the hospitals are as empty as they've ever seen them right now. And because, you know, obviously they've tried to get people who have underlying conditions out of the way in case there's any issues, and also there's no elective surgery and things being done right now, so the hospitals are emptier. That's a double-edged sword. You could say, well, if it, you know, we're all socially distancing, I know my circle of people that I have see every day has dwindled massively, so I would assume, you know, if you're just trying to apply something called logic to it all, if we are all doing this and we are all, you know, distancing more, you know, why would we have this massive explosion? But, you know, you could also say that if we don't see these numbers going up and up and our resources dwindling very quickly, then maybe that offers some a peace of mind as well. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, I think.
Very good.
Now,
the expectation that
it's going to be overrun, definitely. You know, we haven't seen that yet. And honestly, the health department says they don't think it's going to happen.
Well,
you know, they said absolutely told us it's, oh, we don't think that's going to happen. You know, and if we need more respirators or beds, we can get them. So I don't really see, if they don't think it's going to happen and they feel like they've got the resources available, then I don't understand why they can't share it.
And once again, I actually agree with you, but I wanted to challenge that. But on the respirator and bed question, you know, you look at New York where they're obviously a different situation, not apples to apples right now, although I am worried about Louisiana. But, you know, they say they can get the respirators and beds they need, but you've got other states saying, you know, they can't. So I wonder, the situation today is X. What is it in 2 weeks? I hope it's still X or less, but, you know, it could become, I mean, look at Louisiana. That's the one that keeps getting my attention because they're growing. The number of cases a day is huge.
But let's, again, you know, if we talk about the incubation period of this, and I'm not an epidemiologist by any stretch, and I know, but I mean, if we say the incubation period is 2 weeks or 17 days and people are distancing themselves and limiting who they're seeing, shouldn't that number start to go down? I mean, I would think it would. It would seem like it would, you know, and I get it. You know, places where there's very high population density, you know, people make choices when they go out and they do things. We all take a calculated risk when we go out right now. I mean, we could sit in our rooms and absolutely 100% guarantee ourselves we would not get this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could sit in your bathroom and you would never get it, correct?
Well, I don't know about my bathroom, but yes, most likely yes.
I mean, you know, so it's all calculated risk on what we do. I mean, these are all things when we're talking about it. You know, if I go outside and I talk to my neighbor, I'm taking calculated risk of some sort. So, I mean, but the fewer number of people you see, the fewer risks you're taking. And
absolutely,
I would assume that you would start to see this go down. I mean, it just makes logical sense in my opinion. But where are we going to be in 2 weeks? I don't know.
All right, let's pick this up on the other side.
I'm glad that we are not in lockdown. I will say that.
And we'll talk about that here in just a second. Up against the news break, coming right back. More with Rob Hulbert from Land Yap. We'll talk about the new issue out on the streets now, and most importantly, online. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Continue our conversation with Rob Hulbert from Land Yap. And a heads up, too, coming up on Midday Mobile today. Pastor Chris Bell, Three Circles Church. They're running, starting at 9 this morning, that testing for COVID-19. And there's a way before you go.
Right, because, they don't want to, there's a limited number of tests, so we don't want to just run everyone through if you don't have symptoms. But to find out, if you're interested in this, you can text 3C test to 97000. That's 3C test to 97000. You'll get a video that kind of explains the process to you and whether you might be one of those people eligible to take the coronavirus test.
And he's going to join me today at noon on Midday Mobile. We'll talk about how that process went. He got an interesting perspective. He's the guy, you remember, and he was on the show with us weeks and weeks ago, that was with a church group over in Palestine. They were in Bethlehem. And, when I heard there was no room at the inn, I said, well, I think we've read this story before. But they ended up being quarantined there at that hotel in Bethlehem where there were cases of COVID-19. And they had to get tested back then. And they were trying to get from Palestine back to the United States. And they were wanting them to, the officials there in Palestine said, y'all can't leave yet. He went through that whole, so he saw it firsthand. Now he comes back home. Now he's dealing with it here. Get his perspective and more coming up at noon today with him. And also, we'll talk to Justine with the United Way of Southwest Alabama. It's 211, some of the mental health options out there. Because this is another part of this. We saw it after the oil spill. You have health concerns, physical health concerns, obviously, with COVID-19, but also mental health concerns. We'll do that on the show. And then Cam Marston back. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're doing What's Working, the special edition here, and navigating your way through for business, for small business, medium-sized business, navigating your way through this economy that has been so impacted by coronavirus. And it's always great interviews with Cam, and that'll be at 1 today right here on FM Talk 106.5. All right, continue our discussion with Rob. And Rob, let's talk about the new issue of Land Yap, and let's talk about the online version of Land Yap too. If people have not gotten signed up and subscribed, this is like, I know it sounds cliche, but this is a really good time to do it.
It's the best time ever to do it if you want to continue to have news coverage in the community. I mean, we have, like everybody, and I'm not whining because it's us. It's, I realize the reason that we're losing advertisers is because our advertisers are in pain, and I'm sure you're having the same exact problem. The people who supported us for so long are hurting, and, they can't advertise. So it's making it really tough to make ends meet here. And so, one of the things that really, really can help is spend 21 cents a day to get online. And on top of that, you're going to get all the breaking news. You're going to get stuff that's going on. I mean, we're writing stuff every day. And, if you wait till Wednesday, some of that stuff is, may have gone already. You're going to miss out a lot of news. But, it's dirt cheap. It's money nobody misses. I mean, it's $1.50 a week. It's nobody's going to miss that money, and it really helps us. And so we've had a lot of folks that are signing up to do that, and that gives us a lot of support that maybe helps fill in some gaps. And so folks are going to landyapmobile.com and signing up and subscribing. We really appreciate it.
And if somebody does also pick up the paper copy, is it N95 or higher in density if we want to make
a
mask out of it?
Yes, it is. We have printed it. You can breathe through this. Yes, you can absolutely. It is, just fold it up, put it over your face, you'll be safe.
All right, let's talk about...
highly absorbent.
It's good for so many things.
It is.
Let's talk about the municipal level
and coronavirus in the fight. You've got the mayor and finance director Paul Wesch addressing the council this week. When they did, it was Paul Wesch specifically rolling out what would be diminished revenues going forward, at least the projection of diminished revenues going forward. And for a city that's so driven by sales tax, this is worrisome, I'm sure, if you're dealing with budgets down at Government Plaza.
It is, but you know, it also was an opportunity for the mayor to take a victory lap and say, you know what, we've got this under control, guys, right now, because we do have a surplus. You know, Councilman Richardson, who's done nothing but complain about wanting to spend the surplus all this time, didn't have a word to say. You know, this is
a, y'all remember it was as recently as a month ago that he was saying in the annexation debate that we should use the surplus to hire more
to hire cops.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, he can't stand there's a surplus there. He wants to spend it every day. And this is, you know, I think these are things when you look at it and say, boy, you know, I mean, personally, you know, is that the guy you want as mayor? Because he's going to run for mayor. You know, and I think you get a different an attitude. You know, we would, first of all, we'd be under shutdown if he were mayor, I think, and we would also probably spend all that money on something a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's the right thing for families to do if they can do it, and it's also the right thing for at least everybody other than the federal government that gets to print money. It's what you got to do.
Yeah, right. We'd all be a lot better off if we could save a few months worth of our salaries, and you know, it's very hard to do for a lot of people, and you know, we all find that out at times like this. But it's you know, we are, I think, from the city standpoint, it's. You know, it's hard that we have to look at it and say, well, that's great, we've had this surplus, and now it's going to be, a lot of it's going to get spent, but that's what it's for, and that's what the rainy day funds are for. And you know, so I think that's a good thing, and it's something people can be happy about, that we're not looking at a big problem right now.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that's got to come back. You know, are the sales tax going to come back? Those things, are they going to bounce back?
Yeah, but it's not like it's being spent on frivolous. It's spent on keeping government running at the level that people are used to. It's those services they're used to.
Correct. Right. There's no furloughs. There's no diminished services. All those things are not happening right now, as they would be if we were out of money.
That's, I mean, there you go, y'all. I mean, that's why, you know, we still, you're not having some draconian change to municipal government here because of the rainy day fund.
Yeah. And I mean, so it was a, you know, I think it's a, It was a good. It's a good moment for the mayor, even though it's a bad situation. It's at least it's something for them to look at. I mean, I don't think they're running around saying, you know, yay us, but it's but it was a moment where there's, you know, you can look at it and say they've done something right, and over the last several years built something that we needed, and we're ready for this kind of thing.
Do you think we come out of the when we come out of this? Do you think it? It goes back to the same, although I was about to say at the meeting the other day, there was already political, you know, angles to this. I was about to say, did we get better here, the relationship between the council and the mayor, but maybe not.
I don't know. You know, there's so much of this stuff still right now, even in this, you know, there's, you know, just a lot of complaining and people who are saying that we should be in shutdown, we should be locked down and all this kind of stuff, which I think is very political from people who, I mean, I see it from people who are making a lot of noise about running for mayor.
Yeah.
But you know, same thing. They're also on. To me, they're on the wrong side of that, and they're on the wrong side of annexation. So you know, they're two for two on that. But you know, in the lockdown, I think I'm glad that Sandy has been, you know, thoughtful on this whole concept of lockdown, because the one thing about it is you know, the economic destruction that we have already would be. It, you know, it'd be multiplied if we were just in total lockdown and didn't come out of it for weeks.
Well said. Rob Holbert with Land Depth. Thanks for your time, man. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Good luck.
Be good.